Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I'm flying solo today, so Kyle will be back later on in the week. So, hope everybody had a good weekend. I know it's Tuesday, but hope everybody had a good weekend and is being safe. So we got a lot to get to today. So we got some stuff that is current. We got some stuff in the future, and we got some stuff, a couple stories that have been going on for a while, but are kind of being put to bed. So our first story. So let's just preface it by saying this. Everybody at some time in their life has probably done this. And maybe they are still doing it, and that's cool. I have no job. I'm not one to judge. So Variety came out with a little piece that basically said that one in every 10 adults pirated either television, movies, or live sports in 2022. And this is what it said. Approximately 23 million Americans, about 10% of the population, pirated content in the last year, according to an exclusive survey fielded by VIP Plus, run by YouGov.com. So here, I'm going to read off a couple of questions and a couple of their responses, what was actually said. So one of the questions was, well, let me read the article and then I'll get to the questions in a minute. While the vast number of Americans are law-abiding citizens when it comes to consumption, a sizable portion confess to dabbling in illegal downloads or streams for television shows, movies, or live sports. But this doesn't necessarily come down to wanting to collect every episode of a show they love or a sense of getting over on one of the massive corporations. The ever-expanding number of subscription streaming services are a key driver behind content piracy. Close to half of the respondents who pirated shows or movies said the cost of the content was too high. Individually, that is likely untrue, but the cost of subscribing to every single service in order to watch titles wanted is getting steeper and steeper, forcing some to opt out for other means. Yet the cost of watching everything is not only the only factor behind illegal viewing. A third of survey respondents who admitted pirating content said the content is being unavailable in their region for doing so. This most likely covers international shows, movies, and sport rights, often for leagues too small to be profitable for a TV rights deal, such as in the United States. But shows that are not always piracies is owed trying to avoid costs. So the survey goes on to find that the vast majority of content viewed illegally was available on a paid domestic streaming service, echoing the findings of the reasoning for piracy question, which I'll get to in a couple minutes. With almost every major media company save for A&E, for Fox, and individual SVOD services, this trend shouldn't be expected to decline anytime soon. The peak boom, which was hit in 2020, hit new heights in total output. May have helped to contribute in one over three content pirates, approximately 7.4 million Americans, which said they watched illegal content in 2021 rather than 2021. With content spending slowing down, there may be fewer titles to pirate in 2023, which might see the total volume lowered. So pirating content comes with risks. With 37% of those watching or downloading content illegally reporting that they had a device infected with malware as a result of doing so. Even knowing the risks, millions of Americans will opt to stream or download via illicit means. Content made more affordable will stem from this, but with other content coming from it with a lack of availability, piracy will never be easily eradicated in the United States. So, that being said, let me read a couple of questions and I'll get to my thoughts on this. So, the first question that was asked is, did you stream or download pirated television shows, movies, or live sports in 2022. By pirated, we mean content obtained illegally through downloading or someone making a copy of an original. Now, I should preface it by saying this. I'm only going to give the yes and the no. About 15 to 17%, we have not sure or prefer not to say, but prefer not to say kind of is like a hint, hint, wink, wink, we did it, at least in my view. So we had 11% say yes, 76% said no, 5% said not to say. The reason, or what was your reason for downloading it? 48% of people said the cost of content is too high. 36% said it wasn't available anywhere else. 32% said it wasn't available in my region. To the best of your knowledge, was any of the pirated content you watched also available on a legal paid streaming service? 6 out of 10 people said yes. It was 60% that said yes. 2 out of 10, 21% said no. The volume of content. Would you say you watched or downloaded more or less pirated content in 2022 rather than 2021? A third of the people said they downloaded more. 27% said it was less, and about 26% said it was the same. So a little over half of the people said it was either less to the same. And the malware that was being spoken about earlier. Have any of your devices been infected with malware, viruses, ransomware, etc., as a part of that? A little over a third said yes, and one half said no. Okay, thoughts. So here's the thing. What you're getting, so look, I got to say a couple things. Number one, I did this many, 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 many moons ago for something, I think it was called Popcorn Time, and they, you know, they threatened to yank the plug out. So that being said, okay, it's one of those things where I think that you have to, everybody has a budget, okay? And it's not like it's just Netflix today, okay? You have Netflix, Apple TV, Hulu, you know, Disney Plus, all of that. And the fact is that there are going to be some things where you have to pick and choose. Okay, I think Disney Plus offers a bundle. You know, you can get Hulu and Disney Plus and ESPN for, you know, a little bit more. But that all being said, this is affecting how we view things. And, you know, I mean, it's one of those business decisions that it's like anything else. Okay, it's always going to happen. Now, this raises another interesting question, too. Because do people say, well, because it costs too much, do I go out and get a pass to my local movie theater, whether it's an AMC A-list or Regal or whatever it is, and just do it and do it that way? I think that what you have to ask yourself is this. At the end of the day, is it worth it? Right? Is it worth it? Is it worth the possibility of getting caught? Okay. I mean, look, this is all about risk and reward. Okay. How much are you willing to risk to see The Mandalorian or, you know, one of your favorite television shows? Okay. Is it worth the fact of your cable company maybe cutting the cord on you? Is it worth you getting into legal trouble? Is it worth, you know, copyright infringement? All of this stuff. I mean, even YouTube, you know, the stuff that I'm on, you know, I'm doing here. Like, this is why I use stills and I don't use video, is because, you know, I learned a long time ago. I'm still learning. You know, it's about, you know, infringement. And the other thing you got to ask yourself is this. If this were your content, right? If this were your piece of work, if you busted your butt doing this, would you want somebody to steal from you? And, you know, it's not worth it. I mean, and that's why, and look, I get it's all a business. I get that and I understand that. But at the end of the day, you know, it really depends on how many stream services you have, right? I mean, if you've got every single one, you're paying probably $40 or $50 a month. If not, you know, pick and choose. Or do you go get, you know, like I said, a movie pass to your favorite, you know, movie theater? I just think that at the end of the day, and by the way, this is never going to go away. Piracy is never going to go away. It's one of those elephants in the room, if you will, that we don't talk about in the industry. That is a problem. And look, I'm not here to judge. Okay. I don't make that much money. As a matter of fact, I don't have a job right now. I'm doing this to try and build up my base and look for a job. But that being said, I would just say this. You got to ask yourself a couple questions. What is the risk and the reward? Okay. And second of all, is it worth it? Is it worth the consequences? And not only that, even if your cable company doesn't threaten to pull the cord, or is it worth your computer getting viruses? Even if you have Norton, and even if you have, you know, all these antivirus things, it's not worth it. So you got to pick and choose. But I saw that stat today. I mean, this isn't a major breaking story, but I thought it was fascinating, because when you see that the content could have been gotten, they could have bought the content, so to speak, you know, subscribed to the service, and yet they didn't. I, you know, got to wonder. Like, I mean, this is, as I said, this isn't going to change. This isn't going to be anything big. But at the same time, I would just say this. It's for the what you want to do, it's not worth it. So I don't know. As I said, I'm not here to judge. I don't like it. It's there, but I'm not here to judge. So, but I did think that was a fascinating story, because it's not one of those things we all talk about, especially in the entertainment industry, and especially with so much content out there. I mean, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have had this conversation, right? I mean, maybe Netflix, but, you know, I mean, Netflix is doing their own things with passwords. What do you guys think about this? Do you think that piracy I'm never going to ask you guys if you pirated anything. That's on you. But what do you think about the whole piracy issue, as far as what the poll said and how it was done? And do you think, let me ask you guys this, do you think it was a problem? And if so, how did we get it eradicated? Do me a favor, leave your thoughts down in the comments. I'm really, really curious to see what you're thinking. Okay, let's move on to a story that has been in the news for quite a few months. So, as we know, Alec Baldwin, everybody knows the story of Rust, and the unfortunate tragedy with what happened to the to that individual. So they just came to a the prosecutors just came to a deal, basically. This is a big deal, pun intended, but no pun intended. This is a deal that Alec Baldwin is not going to be facing 5 years in jail for. So this comes from Deadline, and this says, although he's still facing involuntary manslaughter charges, Alec Baldwin no longer has to fear a 5-year prison sentence for the fatal shooting of Rust cinematographer Hallie Hutchinson. This comes from the district attorney. In order to avoid further litigation disasters by Mr. Baldwin and his attorneys, the DA and the special prosecutor have removed the firearm enhancement to the involuntary manslaughter charge in the death of Hallie Hutchinson on the Rust film set, end quote. A spokesman for the DA's office said, the prosecutor's priority is securing justice, not securing billable hours for big city attorneys. Okay, taking a swipe at the other attorneys. After an extensive and FBI assisted investigation by the Santa Fe County Sheriff's Office was released last year, Baldwin and Rust Armory, Hannah Gutierrez, and that's who the picture, that's who the other person is you see in that picture, were formally charged by the DA with two counts of involuntary manslaughter on January 31st over the tragic October 21st death of 2021 of Hutchinson's at on the set of Rust. The director was also wounded in this shooting. The final hearing in the Rust case is set for February 24th, with Baldwin Reed scheduled to join virtually. Under New Mexico law, the first charge had a lighter consequence to a fourth-degree felony with sentencing up to 18 months and a $5,000 fine. The second charge, involuntary manslaughter in the commission of a lawful act, was also a fourth-degree felony, punishable by 18 months in jail and up to a $5,000 fine. However, now disregarded, the second charge also carried a firearm enhancement, which transforms the offense from a mandatory five-year sentence. If it was the second charge in the recent statute that the sentence that Baldwin and his lawyers began to argue over the DA with earlier this month, an argument they've won. So the first amended criminal information filing in a New Mexico occurred on February 17th, but became public today. And it reads, so it gives the statute and what happened. And it goes on to say that they're going to be dropping the charges. They're going to be dropping those charges for Baldwin and Gutierrez-Ruiz. And I got to say this, that this whole thing has been a tragedy since it happened. We'll be going on 3 years in October. And the thing is that so much went wrong with this. And, I mean, I kind of figured Baldwin was never going to do a day in jail. I mean, he went through the process and he's still going through the process. But at the end of the day, this was a tragic accident. A tragic, tragic accident. And the fact is, we don't know how live rounds got on the set. I think that there needs to be a lot of a lot of discourse about how this happened, but moreover than that, there needs to be oversight. No set. This is what, by the way, this is why we have armories. Okay, armories are supposed to be the ones that, you know, take care of this stuff. So the actor, and by the way, it is up to Baldwin too to look at the gun. I mean, it's his responsibility. I mean, they say clear, they say open, they say whatever. It is his responsibility to have that happen. I think that at the end of the day, I've said this before, Baldwin was never going to do a day in jail. He just wasn't. He just wasn't. This was a tragic accident that happened. And, you know, they settled with the husband and they said, okay, well, you can be an EP on the thing. Anybody, an EP is it's just a name. It's just a credit. And they did it because they were going to settle. And that leads into a whole other conversation. Do you finish the film? Do you not finish the film? You know, they wanted to go back and actually finish the film. And they're going to. That's fine. But it's always going to have this dark cloud, like The Crow, lingering over it. Or the Twilight Zone film. Back early in the 1980s with a helicopter crash. This is going to be one of those films that's always going to have a sting on it. And I just think that it's an absolute shame that in tragedy, I mean, she lost her life and there needs to be oversight. There absolutely needs to be more oversight. And whatever that is. And you got to remember, too, This was a small production. This wasn't like, you know, Mission Impossible or John Wick or anything else where, you know, it's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. So, I don't know. It's sad. At the end of the day, it's a sad, sad tragedy. And, you know, it is what it is. I'm glad they're finally getting closure, and I'm finally glad this is putting to bed. For me, I would want to see Baldwin any money that he had to pay for a fine, or Gutierrez Reed, if they are paying a fine, I would want to see them start a foundation for the arts in her name. That's what you do. You take that $10,000, okay, or 25, you know, let's say $7,500. You take that $7,500, even though it's not a lot, it's a start, and you have people donate. Okay, not only to the GoFundMe, but you have them donate to a fund that they're going to go to, you know, donate to, and you start something for the arts. And you make it so, hey, look, any other aspiring filmmakers can join, you know, or you know, find out about this. And I think that that's a problem. So I don't know. What do you guys think about this? Do you think Baldwin should go to jail? How do you think do you think there needs to be more oversight on the sets? Do you think Gutierrez Reed should go to jail for her role in this? What do you think they should finish the film? What do you guys think? Leave your thoughts down in the comments section, and I'll get back to you. Okay, so we're moving on now to something a little more cheery, right? So Michael Crichton has been one of those great filmmakers, and he's brought us a lot of good films over the years. Whether it's, you know, Jurassic Park or Disclosure. I mean, some better than others, okay? Truth be told. But that being said, it's one of those things where, I mean, I like everybody loves most or a lot of his work. And you can see a lot of it right there. You've got Jurassic Park, which is probably the perennial one, right? I mean, that not only changed Hollywood, but, you know, Lost World, not so much. But he's done some other really good work, okay? I mean, I like Disclosure for what it was. You know, that was Demi Moore and Michael Douglas and Donald Sutherland. That was a good movie. That was fun. Not fun. Fun's not the right word. Let me rephrase that. It was intriguing. It was a good drama. Good drama. Of course, you had, you know, the Andromeda Strain and several others. So the reason I bring this up is because Michael Crichton, so Blackstone, okay, is going to publish 8 Michael Crichton novels, which he wrote under the pseudonym John Lang when he was in Harvard Med School. So this is the article from Deadline. Michael Crichton's brilliant mix of science and narrative results in north of $10 million in revenue and 250 million books sold. Now the estate of the author, who died in 2008, has made another major deal to bring his works back to new audiences. Blackstone Publishing has made a 7-figure deal with Crichton's son to acquire the worldwide print, ebook, audio rights to Crichton's first series of novels, which he wrote under the pseudonym John Lang. This was long before Jurassic Park, ER, and such, and he wrote the first 3 titles while he was at Harvard Med School. The side pursuit also came prior to his first breakout novel done under the Crichton name, which you can see there up in the top left-hand corner, the 1971's The Andromeda Strain. The 8 books, unconnected tales of fiction in numerous genres, will be shopped to studios and streamers for potential films and television adaptations. Perhaps Crichton didn't want to mix writing prescriptions with what he was doing, but he used the name John Lang for these books. Odds On in 1966, Scratch One in 1967, Easy Go in 1968, Zero Cool 1969, The Venom Business, 1969, Drug of Choice, 1970, Grave Descent, 1970, and Binary, 1972. Some of these novels touched on the science sandbox he wrote in later on with pulpy crime thriller twists. All the books are set in the 1960s and 70s and were, in a way, his tribute to Ian Fleming's James Bond novels, and one to his favorite Alfred Hitchcock films, To Catch a Thief. The subjects range from secret treasures to heists, archaeology, unlikely heroes, classic villains, and seductive and at times treacherous lovers. At the time, Crichton becoming an author, he thought it was a dream, although he had the smarts to be a doctor. These books birthed a great writing career. The propulsion here is Crichton's son, CEO, Sherry Crichton, the author's widow, who overhauled the company in recent months. She signed the company and the book catalog to somebody at the Story Factory. And her intention is to generate all of these into film, television, and publishing. The first deal by the restructured Crichton son was a publishing partnership with James Patterson, who is another established author, who also moonlighted as an author to the CEO of the ad agency, J. Walter Thomas, bringing two of the biggest and most successful wordsmiths to collaborate on an unfinished Crichton manuscript. Little Brown Company will publish it, and film and rights will be brokered in the near future. And then it goes on for his career. And then he went on to do, of course, ER. I think Michael Crichton is one of the best authors out there. Or he was one of the best authors out there. And his work is just amazing. I mean, everybody remembers him from Jurassic Park and another film like Disclosure, even though Congo didn't do so well. But in Sphere, he's got a lot of good books out there. But this is the show everybody remembers. ER. This was the powerhouse lineup on Thursday nights in the 1990s that you tuned in for. And they ended up doing over 15 years. They ended up doing 330 episodes and won 23 Emmys. And that just goes to show you something, right? And I mean, of course, this was, now, mind you, this picture was the original cast. There were several others that came in and out, you know. You had a very young George Clooney there, Noah Wiley, you know, Juliana Margulies, you know, Anthony, I'm blanking on his name, Anthony Edwards, of course, who starred in Top Gun. But yeah, so, this was that Thursday night lineup was huge back in the 90s. You had Friends, you had ER, and that was this. And it was an amazing, because it was authentic, it was good, it was quality. It had the drama there. It had the romance. It had everything you wanted. I'm really glad. And the fact that they're actually doing these books, I mean, it sounds to me, okay, like, I mean, I don't particularly care. And they probably changed some of these, you know, odds are on scratch one. But it looked like he was very, very prolific in what he was doing. I mean, this guy was, he turned out two books in a year, you know, not to mention going to med school, right? And with some of these things, you know, dealing with, you know, archaeology and, you know, you have, you know, spy things, and it just, it's, you know, unlikely heroes and classic villains. It's really interesting to see what they could make out of this. You know, you've got the villains. It's just, it's one of those things where I think that it's really good. He even wrote, you know, he did another one. You know, one of the other ones he did later on in the 1970s was called Drug of Choice. That could be interesting. That could be like a doctor. I'm spitballing. Could be a doctor that's, you know, an angel of death. And he's choosing all these different medications to kill his patients with. I don't know. I'm just getting spitballing, like I said. But yeah. So I think that I think this is a good move. I think it's a really good move. And I can't wait to see what they have in the future for them. What do you guys think? That's my question. What do you guys think? Do you think that, are you interested in this? Are you a big reader? Did you like Michael Crichton's books? If so, are you excited to see these books turned into television and film and everything else? If so, which ones out of the bunch do you think you'd be interested in? leave your thoughts down in the comments for me. Okay, so now we move from books to television and film. And television and film is, you know, one of those things that, you know, is exactly why we're here. And it's the Golden Globes. So the Golden Globes, okay, have already come up and come out with a date for next year. Fascinating to see how that's going to be, you know, they already have a date for it. And it's just amazing to me that they do. So it's one of those things where I'm curious. So here we go. The Golden Globes, and this was by THR. The Golden Globes will return Sunday next year, but it will remain who will televise or stream the shows. Next year's Globes will be on January 7th, 2024, which is a Sunday. Now, this moves back to the Sunday in the January spot of the awards calendar. It's going to be hosted by Jared Carmichael, and it's going to be aired Tuesday on the 10th on NBC, and partially to the conflicts in the New Year's Day and the NFL's last regular season and the Critics' Choice. The Golden Globes made a deal with NBC, the network which broadcast since 1996 for the Globes, declined to air the 2022 edition in wake of an entertainment industry boycott sparked by the Los Angeles Times. The expose in 2021 that reveals the Globes organization, the HFP, the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, contained no black members and had engaged in unethical conduct and suspect financial practices. This year's telecast averaged six and a quarter million viewers, down from 10%, from 6.91 million from the last televised ceremony in 2021 because of, of course, COVID. With future editions of the awards show, including the 2024 show, the ceremony, it's going to air, but we don't know where it's going to air. And it's possible that SAG recently inked a deal to stream their ceremony on Netflix, a streaming partner which could be a future place for the Globes to go. This is produced by Dick Clark Incorporated Productions. Let me say this. I think that the fact that they're actually going and they don't know where they're going right now, they've already got the date. They wanted to lock everything up now. It's interesting to see this. I think that, I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on a bunch of things. I mean, we're 9 months away. We're still in the award season of 2023, you know. We've got about 3 or 4 weeks from the Oscars. So it's fascinating the Globes came out and did this now. I think people, in all honesty, are going to forget about this. I think people are going to forget about this. And I think people are just going to brush this off to the side. Because what will end up happening is... They're in the here and now. They don't care about next year's Globes. They care about what happened this year's Globes. And they're going to care about what happens at, you know, the rest of the award season. So I think that, look, it's one of those things where it's good to announce it. I'm happy they announced it. But at the end of the day, it's not that big of a deal, okay? Because people don't care about it. They'll start caring when award season happens next year, not right now. So I'm glad that they announced it. I'm glad they've got their host. That's a big deal. But I do believe that in the grand scheme of things, the news just isn't... I know why they did it, but I just don't see... You know, I don't see the importance of it. So, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think it's going to be come This will start to be important when the after March, because, you know, we could have all these other, you know, SAG might be going to Netflix and everything else. So then you might have precedent, and that's a whole other thing. So, but it's out. The Globes are out. They have a date. They have a time. They probably have a place too. And, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens with it. I'm interested in seeing what happens to it. What do you guys think? Do you care the Golden Globes have already announced what date they're going to be airing, whether it's on streaming or on NBC? Do you care if it is on streaming or NBC? Or are you the type, let's get past this award season before we go to the next award season? Leave us your thoughts down in the comments. I'm really fascinated to see what you got to say. Okay, so the final story of the day. And this is the one that everybody's clicking on, then leaving. So we're finally getting to the meat and potatoes. So as we know, and I put out a poll the other day, The Mandalorian is going to be beginning March 1st. Now, that being said, we are going to be covering The Mandalorian here on the channel. Kyle and I discussed it, and we got a bunch of stuff going on, and we are going to be covering it and doing the spoiler cast for it. So come back here for that. I'll talk more about that in a little bit. But yeah, and so it's one of those things where I think it's going to be another big show. I mean, I have to catch up on it myself, but it will be interesting. So the reason why this is important, it's not just because of March 1st, but Jon Favreau, of course, the big wig of The Mandalorian, and this comes from The Wrap, basically says that Mandalorian 4, Season 4, has already been written. So, in an interview with a French media outlet, he said, we have to know, let me read the article. So, it's already been written. There's the possibility of the tale that Favreau has already written several scripts for the breakout live-action series before it's even greenlit. So he's worked at a furious pace, overseeing several seasons of The Mandalorian, much to the related output of the Book of Boba Fett. And in a new interview, as I said, which you can find on Twitter, he slips it. It's already been written and it's ready to go. We have to know where we're going to be telling a fully formed story. We mapped it out. Dave Filoni himself and I slowly started to write each episode. I was writing it during post-production. All of it feels like a continuation in one full story. While this might rightfully seem like a dig at the Star Wars sequels trilogy, which often let filmmakers with little in the way of progress or consistency, there is more than that to that too. Favreau is stressing the importance of a unified storyline because Filoni is now working on spinoffs like Okasaur with Rosario Dawson and another show, which Favreau reveals is on the set, is set basically in the same time period as Mandalorian. So Okasaur and Skeleton Crew all take place within the Star Wars time period. There's a lot more things we've got to keep in mind and also stuff we're building up from the previous season of The Mandalorian as well. So he goes on to say that this is going to be hitting streaming on the 1st. And so you're going to get much more information in March because that's when Star Wars Celebration is going to be going on or that. So I got to say that I like the fact that he's already got the 4th season written. Now, I have to sit down and I have to watch all of the first 2 seasons. I kind of know what happens, but, you know, one of those things. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to cover it. And, I think it's going to be one of those things where Boba Fett has always been, well, I mean, Mandalorian, but even in the early Star Wars movies, Boba Fett was one of those very mysterious characters, right? Like a Han Solo. You never knew where he came from. And this whole Mandalorian thing's bringing all these revelations out. I can't wait for this. I can't wait for season 3. And as I said before, we're going to be covering it here on the channel. Okay? So how it's going to work is this. We are going to be covering every... So the episode begin March 1st, as everybody else knows. And we're going to be doing the spoiler cast on the 2nd, or the day right after it. So, I'm excited. I'm excited. I think that this is going to be the biggest season of it yet. And it's only... And I like... They're only making 8 episodes. Not only for viewing content for me, but because they're probably quality. They're probably top-notch quality. And we're in the thick meat and potatoes and the thick of it right now. I can't wait for this. So, what do you guys think? He said he already wrote season 4, and they've already got a storyline planned out. Do you think he's jumping the gun a little, or are you happy that they've got it all taken care of? What else Star Wars are you looking forward to? Are you looking forward to the Skeleton Crew or Okasawa or any of these other Bad Batch maybe, or any of these other ones? Leave your thoughts down in the comments for me, and I will respond to them. Okay, guys. So that's going to do it for today's show. But I just wanted to touch on a couple of things before we head out today. We've got a big couple of weeks coming up. And I mean big couple of weeks coming up. Let me just run through exactly what we're going to be doing. So we are covering still. I mean, we just did another stream of The Last of Us. So we're going to be going to episode 7 this week. And anybody who has seen the previews for episode 7, it looks like we're going to be getting the Left Behind DLC, finally. So really curious to see where that goes. I mean, I've played it all, and I'm just curious to see how that whole thing goes. We just had Quantumania come out. We just did a spoiler cast you can find. Go check that out. Kyle and I ended up doing a spoiler cast about it. We ended up figuring out, giving our thoughts and descriptions about it. And it was good. It wasn't great. I thought Jonathan Majors was the shining star of that movie. I thought his scenes with Michelle Pfeiffer were amazing. But it did have its issues. So, it is what it is. This is when it's going to start to pick up. Creed 3. So this is coming out in 2 weeks, and it looks amazing. Now, I have to sit down and watch Creed. That being said, we are going to be doing Creed Week here on the channel. So, we're going to be doing Creed Week here on the channel. So we're going to do rewatches of Creed, Creed 2, and then going to see Creed 3. So that being said, I'm going to go see Creed 3 probably on Thursday. And the spoiler cast for that, for Creed 3, is going to be on the 4th or the 5th. It will be the 5th. The Saturday will be on the 5th. And then don't forget, tune in for The Last of Us stream on the 6th. And then we're going to have that. And then we're going to jump right to May. I mean, now don't get me wrong. There were other things that were coming out, like John Wick and everything else. There's going to be other stuff there. But these are the ones we're going to be doing spoiler cast for. So Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Really looking forward to that. You got Across the Spider-Verse, which is the 2nd. You've got Transformers, which the June's going to be packed, right? Absolutely packed. You're going to have Transformers Rise of the Beast on the 9th. You got The Flash on the 16th. And then at the end of the month, you've got Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. So, I mean, June is going to be absolutely packed. And we're going to be doing spoiler cast for all of these movies. And then in July, we have Barbie, which I don't have listed here, but we also have Oppenheimer. Well, we have Mission Impossible first. That's going to be huge. I mean, that's right now probably the most anticipated movie of the year next to The Flash. Can't wait for that. Can't wait for that. And then, of course, you have Oppenheimer and then several other films, which will be coming out later on this year. I would just say this, guys, come back here because you're going to be getting all this content. You're going to be getting the roundup the weeks that we don't do the spoiler cast. You're going to be getting all this great stuff. You're going to be getting a whole Mandalorian series. You're going to be getting the rest of The Last of Us, everything. I would say this, as it says down there, hit that like, hit that subscribe button, because it's all going to be great stuff. And we're going to be, Kyle and I are going to be so busy from March to August, it's going to be crazy. And you're going to be getting great shows. Not to mention, we're always on the lookout for great interviews. Speaking of The Last of Us, you can go check out Kyle's fantastic interview with Timothy Good. He is the editor, the chief editor of the number one streaming series in the world right now, The Last of Us. And yeah, guys, we're just putting all this great content out there for you. You want to follow me on Twitter? Hit me up on Twitter, okay? That's my screen name. I'm always hosting spaces. Kyle is always in spaces, and come follow us there. We're always talking about movies. And yeah. So I think that's it. Oh, I should say one other thing before we go. We are going to be doing a Heat for the perfect movies. We are going to be recording Heat, which is going to be our March perfect movie in our perfect movie series. I'm going to be recording that on Friday. Fargo is going to be coming to you next week as well. That is the first reactions film. So you guys are going to be getting that. And yeah, you guys are going to be getting all that content. So that's about it for today. So do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great day. And I'm David Steele, and this has been Real Talks, and you have a good one. Bye-bye, guys.